Welcome to those of you listening to Physicians Beyond the Bedside for the first time. Welcome back to my audience and community members. I have a fantastic treat for you today. My guest is Dr. Ronnie Shalev. Ronnie will be sharing with you her transition and transformation from her clinical role, or should I say roles, into her current non-clinical activities. Ronnie has created a role for herself in a company that is not a healthcare provider, but provides service to physicians and healthcare organizations. She has also created what you would consider a passive stream of income. I know you will find her story well worth listening to. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Physicians Beyond the Bedside. I am your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Physicians Beyond the Bedside is a podcast that will help you find a non-clinical role and take your career in new, rewarding, and sometimes unanticipated directions. I am very happy that you have joined my podcast audience and community to learn about opportunities beyond the bedside. Hello and welcome to Physicians Beyond the Bedside. In this episode, I'm excited to be welcoming Dr. Ronnie Shalev to my show. Ronnie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I think you're doing really important work, so I'm really honored to be on your show.
Well, thank you. I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time now. I'd like to start the interview just by having you explain to my audience the role that you're currently doing. I think you have a very interesting non-clinical roles that you're working on right now. So maybe you could share with the audience a little bit about what you're doing, and we'll start from there.
Yeah. So I have actually two parallel careers at the moment. One of them, I am the director of post-market surveillance at a medical device company. And I've recently taken over their pre-authorization department as well. And my second career is I'm an apartment syndicator. So I'm a professional real estate investor, and I help other physicians invest in real estate.
Great. So which of those two roles have you been doing for the longer period of time?
The director of post-market surveillance.
And when did you transition into that role?
That was October of 2020.
And prior to that, were you working full-time clinically, or had you started to transition by assuming some part-time responsibilities away from the bedside?
So I have been working full-time for 16 years. So I wasn't doing any kind of part-time work, but I was working at multiple facilities. So some of them were full-time and some of them were part-time, but together the workload was a full-time load.
Okay. So what was it that attracted you to the medical device world back in 2020?
So I was looking for an exit out of clinical medicine, and I didn't know exactly where I was going to land. I explored the startup world. I explored healthcare navigation, utilization management. I explored health tech industry. And from all of my years of exploration, it was about 2.5 years prior to that. That's when I decided I wanted a big company that was already established, a big company that was already making an impact on the world. And that's kind of where I landed with medical device. You know, I considered pharmaceuticals, but the pharma world, I felt focused on mostly cancer drugs and orphan diseases. So I felt like I, as an emergency medicine physician, didn't have a lot to offer in terms of where the physicians enter into the pharmaceutical industry. They enter through medical affairs. I didn't have a lot of background in either of those. So that's where I felt like medical device might be a better fit for me.
Okay. So how long did you explore those various options, UM, pharma, and medical device, the other areas that you had looked at? Was that a brief period of time? Was that a 2-year exploration of various options? Tell us a little bit about how you went through that process.
Yeah, in 2017, I started saying, okay, what am I doing? How am I going to get out? Do I need a master's degree? Do I need an MBA, an MMM? You know, there's so many different types of degrees, and do I need to do an executive one? Or so I explored all those options and decided that even if I got an MBA, I would still need experience. Like they might say, okay, you have an MBA, but you don't have any experience.
Right.
So that's when I chose to get actual experience instead of doing an MBA. So while I was working full time, I was doing consulting work for utilization management, seeing if that was something that I like. And I also was chief medical officer of a health tech startup company that was in the navigation space.
Okay.
So I got experience being chief medical officer of a startup, experience in the technology and kind of all of the phases of it, the marketing, the being the KOL of that company, and talking with other experts and things like that. So I got that experience. And that's when kind of I pivoted to deciding I don't want a startup company. Mm-hmm. I want an established company.
Okay. So there was a 3-year period of time where you were really exploring different types of careers, trying to gain experience outside of clinical experience.
Yes.
And did you
trying to build up my resume?
Yes.
During that time.
And did you do any non-degree oriented training or coursework besides getting the MMM or an MBA, that type of thing?
Well, I didn't get the MBA or MMM.
Right, right.
But no, I didn't do any other formal education.
Okay.
I did hire several mentors and coaches. I would go to conferences. There was the Physician Helping Physicians that I went to. I got a physician coach to help me as well with some mindset work. And I got a career coach that helped me work on my resume, work on my LinkedIn, really figure out how I wanted to attack the actual, I guess, transition into a new field, not to the transition period, but more how do you do it? Like, how do you get a job?
So it sounds like you had several different coaches or mentors, and you picked coaches that could help you with specific aspects of the transition. You mentioned several coaches that you had. Did you have all these coaches simultaneously? Were they sequential as you found that you needed help in different areas? And where did you go to find the coach?
Yeah, they were very sequential. I started with just physician coaches, and I found them through Facebook.
Okay.
My one physician coach with the mindset work, she, you know, wanted to help me very specifically with maybe trying to stay in medicine, which, you know, I think by that point, I was not planning on staying. So I felt like, okay, well, that didn't help me as much. Okay, so now what? Well, how am I going to actually make that leap? I need someone, maybe I don't need a physician. Maybe I just need someone that helps people find jobs. And you can't just hire a recruiter to help you because the recruiters are getting paid from other companies. So I hired a career coach that helped people find jobs, but by helping their resumes and helping them with interviews and helping them with a strategy on getting those interviews.
Okay.
And I found her on LinkedIn.
And how long did you use her? Did you use her just prior to getting the job with the medical device company, or did you use her for a year or two prior to that?
No, I used her for a very short time. I knew exactly, she gave me the outline of what I need to be doing.
Okay.
She told me, you need to be speaking to 40 people a week.
Okay.
You need to be reaching out on LinkedIn to this many people. You know, we need to, you know, so she helped me fix my LinkedIn. If I was going to reach out to people, my LinkedIn needed to look good. She helped me with my resume. I mean, when I started, my resume was a CV that was like 5 pages. And by the end, it was a 2-pager that was business speak.
Yeah. I think that's an important point that I learned as I went through the same transition, is that the typical curriculum vitae that most physicians publish with all of their academic achievements, the articles that they published, or those types of things are less relevant when you're applying for a non-clinical position. People are interested in different aspects. They're interested in your leadership skills, your ability to lead teams, for example, in many of the healthcare administration roles that I've applied for. And I got the same advice. And I think it's great advice for people to take your voluminous curriculum vitae and bring it down to a 1 or 2 page resume that can really catch the eye of a recruiter who may not have as much appreciation for all of the work that's represented in a 5 or 10 page document.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I also think it's very important to use the language that corporations or companies are looking for, because you might be saying the same thing and it doesn't register. You can say, I've led teams, you know, through multiple. Now I speak corporate, so I'm trying to make it non-corporate, but, you know, you want to be able to say, I've, you know, worked cross-functionally with multiple led initiatives. And there's all kinds of like key words that as a physician, I did not use. And it's almost funny, like my pre-resume and then my post-resume, it's like completely different. I mean, completely different.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, it sounds like you're working full-time for a medical device company right now, is it a Monday through Friday role?
Yeah, Monday through Friday. I get holidays and weekends off, no call. It's very interesting work, very impactful work, and it's way less stressful than the emergency room.
And how many people are reporting to you, and what is the focus of your teams?
Yeah, so I have actually a team of 120 people under me.
Okay.
So this was completely new. I never had so many people under me. I have 6 direct reports, and they each have teams. My focus is quality of the medical device. So if there are any issues worldwide with our devices, we are the front line where we pick up those issues. So I'm speaking to physicians, I'm speaking to patients, my team is, and we're getting a lot of that information of, you know, your lead kinked or your anchor did this or whatever it is. We take that information and we start investigating it and looking for signals to see if this was a manufacturing problem, if this is a design problem, if this is a user problem where maybe they're using the device incorrectly and they need education on it. So I have a team that takes in that information. I have a team that actually helps troubleshoot with the physician or with the clinical specialist or with the patient. So it's multiple different teams. I have a team of engineers that once those devices come back, they take them apart and they x-ray them and they measure them and they figure out what's going on. And then I have a team that files the regulatory reports with the FDA and the different regulatory agencies worldwide. And all of those are coded so that internally we are looking at those codes and we're trending it every single month and looking for signals. Is there any issues with our devices?
Do any of your teams get involved in the quality process as new devices are being designed and manufactured? I know there are teams that look at and QI every device that rolls off the line, so to speak. Is that some information that comes back to your team, or are you mainly involved in post-release as it's being used in a clinical arena?
Yeah, so I'm post-market surveillance, so anything that's already on the market. However, within the quality department, so my peers are in the pipe, they're in the, you know, the research and development and the design phase, and they take the signals that we're picking up, and that's being fed into design changes, and that's being fed into, you know, the whole R&D, like what are the users feeling? What are the users seeing? And how can we improve our product?
Okay. So that communication back and forth from post-market to R&D is pretty hardwired in the organization, it sounds like.
Yeah. And it goes into manufacturing as well. So if there's something going on in one manufacturing line and we are able to pick that up, I mean, they can go all the way and analyze and figure out like one operator was doing one thing and you can decide, you know, how to handle that, like whether it's to pull all that inventory or the inventory's fine or, you know, so, and you got to figure out, there's a lot of tracing of the inventory. Where is it worldwide? Where is it? And what's the impact to the patient? So it's very interesting.
What are the skills that you brought as a physician or that are brought by physicians into these roles that are especially valuable for these companies? I mean, you're looking at taking data from, as you said, international sites, and I've not really had a lot of experience working with devices from the manufacturing standpoint. I've always been involved from that post-marketing standpoint, but how do they use your skill set And why is that such a valuable commodity for these companies?
You know, what's interesting is that the person before me in this role was an engineer. Mm-hmm. It's not required to be a physician. In fact, they didn't even think a physician should go into this role.
Okay.
But my boss was just had a very big thinking, and he's just very creative. And he thought that I would be a good fit in here. And he was right, because as soon as I came in there, they're like, wow, we never thought about it from a physician's perspective.
Okay.
And so my big input is the impact to the patient and the impact to the physician. So when the physician is complaining about something, I know what it means. Mm-hmm. And I know that they don't just typically complain. Like if it's already being escalated up into a company, then there's something going on and we need to investigate. I also help from the clinical perspective to decide what is reportable to these regulatory agencies, because a lot of it, you have to report anything that's a serious injury, and the definition of serious injury can be kind of gray.
Yes.
So having that clinical experience does help make that decision. But I would say that my critical thinking skills that I have honed over my career as a physician and all the years of education is really what I bring to the table.
So you said something that really piqued my interest right there that I've had a theory about for a while. So was this your first job with the company that you're currently working with?
Yes.
So there was no job positioned that said, we're looking for a physician to fill this kind of role. And yet you are now in the role as a physician. I think that many physicians are so used to applying for positions that have specific requirements that they meet that they don't pursue roles that are outside of their sort of their lane, so to speak. But tell me how you went about that. Was your coach involved in that? Was this just an idea that you said, you know what, I'm a physician, I can bring value, I'm going to apply for positions that they say they don't even want a physician in?
I wish I was that creative. And this was not anything to do with the coach. I hired her for a short period of time. She taught me the basics of what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. I knew that this was going to be a long play. And that's what she told me. She's like, it's going to take you years to find a position.
Okay.
You don't want to move. You want a certain salary. You don't want to travel. You don't want to relocate. So all of these things, it's going to take a longer time. So I hired her. She gave me the basics and then I applied them. And I wish I could tell you a great story. Like I had this epiphany. I'm going to try to do this. It's nothing like that. My husband met my boss at our synagogue. And they just were chatting and he's like, yeah, I work for this company. And he's like, oh, my wife is looking to transition. Why don't you guys have coffee? So we had coffee and we actually continued to talk. And he was like, oh, as a physician, you should talk to the medical affairs team and you should talk. You know, he went to the traditional where I might fit in the medical affairs role. And at that time, they had no openings and, you know, they didn't really feel like I was a good fit anyway. And I just continued. I continued doing just talking to people and networking and really during that interview, showing them that and connecting the dots for them that I have other skills than what my resume says. The fact that I'm a physician makes me an even better candidate because I'm a quick learner. I'm a universal student I'm an adult learner. And so whatever it is, I can figure it out. I mean, if I can figure out how to treat a gunshot wound and bring people back to life, I can figure out other things. We do hard things as physicians. Right. So I can do it. So I just had to convince someone to take a chance on me. And I worked on that convincing with my boss, with my current boss. You know, we developed a friendship. And eventually it took over a year for a position to even open up that he might possibly see me in that position. But he is the one that had the vision to put me in this role. So I give him 100% of the credit, but I did work to convince him that I could do any role that he would give me.
That's a great story. That actually is a great story. And so many times I've had success using that type of networking. I did a podcast probably now about 6 or 8 months ago on the Hidden Job Network and how valuable it can be for physicians just by doing the type of networking and these fortuitous meetings with people and getting to know people, developing relationships, not necessarily even starting with a hard sell, but just getting to understand what problems they're having and how you, with your critical thinking skills, can help solve some of those problems for them. It sounds like a great fit for you. So that is a pretty cool story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah,
now, did you have to pay your husband a finder fee, by the way? I was going to ask that question too.
Yeah, he takes credit. And I'm like, no, you can't take credit for this.
That's great. I have a special offer for you today. I have created a list of the top 10 skills physicians need to be maximally effective in leadership roles. The skills I included on the list have been studied and found to increase the effectiveness of leaders in all organizations. You need to cultivate these skills when you assume a leadership role. Physicians are leaders not only in clinical settings, but in non-clinical settings as well. These skills will benefit you, whether you are at the bedside or beyond. Please visit my website at beyondthebedside.net/top10leadership skills for your free copy of this excellent resource today. I will also place a link to this resource in the show notes. Feel free to click on that in the show notes below. So tell us a little bit more about your decision to completely leave healthcare organizations rather than transition into a non-clinical role within, say, a hospital or a medical group, or even an emergency management group, or potentially even a commercial payer or something like that. Why did you decide to make a break and completely move into a non-healthcare provider type organization?
You know, I explored a lot of different avenues, and I didn't want to make a jump into something else that I wasn't going to like. I had a lot riding on it. Leaving medicine was very scary, and I didn't want to make the wrong choice. So I really had to think about, well, what is it that I want, and kind of reverse engineer it. Part of it was looking at what kind of lifestyle I wanted, what the salary I wanted, what my day-to-day activities that I wanted to be doing, but also looking at the company itself. I wanted a company that I could align with their mission, that I didn't, you know, hate the industry. You know, I didn't want to work for insurance companies. In my mind, they're evil.
Okay.
So, and you know, not to disrespect anybody that works for them, but I just couldn't work for them. And so I wanted to work for a company that was doing good in the world. So that was a big driver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looking at that. Why didn't I choose something within the hospitals? I was so tired of the hospital systems.
Okay.
And hospital politics. There's just no way that I would have been happy doing that kind of role.
Okay. So what you mentioned that it was scary. What scared you the most? What made you, I guess, afraid to make the change?
You know, a lot of it was a financial fear.
Mm-hmm.
I was the primary breadwinner of the house, making a lot of money. And any kind of jump to anything would have really inconvenienced my family and our trajectory. And I was scared that I was going to make a decision that I didn't like. And what if I made a switch and then I didn't like that and then had to switch again and then had to switch again. And then each time financially we're impacted. And that's where I started investing in real estate and seeing that I could create passive income that helped me with my fear because it created a buffer in terms of money coming in that I had initially not considered.
Okay.
And I said, okay, well, I'm getting this money that's coming in. Now I can start looking at other options, other careers that might maybe paid less. Maybe it's not so scary because worst comes to worst, we still have income coming in from the real estate investing, and it won't be that impactful on the family. We're not going to have to eat just like ramen and crackers.
That's very reassuring, isn't it? So I know your father's a physician. My father's a physician. What specialty was your dad in?
Pain management.
Okay. And what was his reaction when he found out that you were strongly considering leaving clinical medicine, that you were unhappy in clinical medicine?
You know, he was scared for me. He was scared that I wasn't going to make it outside of the physician world. What was I going to do? You know, he had known a lot of physicians that went into business or other fields. So there was a lot of fear. You know, am I going to be happy? And then there was a lot of like, well, maybe she chose the wrong specialty and that's why she's leaving. I did warn her. He warned me about emergency medicine, which I chose to ignore him. And, you know, he was like, I kind of told you so, you know, but there was a lot of fear for me. Like, am I doing the right thing? And do I know what I'm doing? Are you going to be okay? Is your family going to be okay?
Did you have any colleagues that were especially concerned about your decision or just negative about your decision? Or were most of your colleagues supportive of your decision?
You know, my colleagues are all burnt out and unhappy. And instead of really commiserating with them, I stopped really sharing that I was actively trying to get out. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really share that with them. But when I left, they were like, what's going on? You just gave away all your shifts. Did you just win the lottery? And I'm like, kind of. I'm moving to a medical device role. And they're like, what? Like, how? When? How did you do it? So I didn't get a lot of reactions along the journey, but when it was like at the finish line, they were surprised, they were curious, and, you know, hopefully they were inspired, but I don't know.
Have you had any of them maintain a communication with you and ask you for help in terms of their own transition or not from any of the colleagues that you were working with at the time?
Yeah, they've actually all reached out. I'm in touch with everybody.
Okay.
They are all interested in how did I make that transition and how did I, you know, take a pay cut? And I said to them, I didn't take a pay cut because I've been investing in real estate that's been bridging the financial gap. And so a lot of them have started investing with me. So it's pretty, you know, exciting that I can now help them invest and pretty much buy back their time. So they're not having to work, you know, this many shifts to get this much income. Now maybe the income that's coming in, they can work less and maybe be burnt out less.
Let's talk a little bit around the work that you're doing with real estate investing. I know you've alluded to it a couple of times during the interview, but tell me a little bit about how you started doing that and exactly what you're doing to create the passive income that you're talking about.
Yeah, so I started off thinking in my mind, like, I have a job, I've paid up off my house, I don't have high expenses. This is, I'm going to be putting it in the 401k. I'm all set. You know, I don't need to think about anything else. And then I started seeing like ups and downs in the stock market. And, you know, your portfolio goes down and then it goes up and then it goes down. And it, ultimately, it's chaotic. And I was like, there has to be a different way. How do you make money? Like, how is it that other people make money? I feel like I'm not making the money. Like, my expenses would go up proportionately to my salary if I got a bump or something like that in the salary. And, you know, my husband is an entrepreneur and he was like, well, I have friends that are investing in real estate. And I'm like, I don't want to hear anything about that. And then, you know, slowly he would tell me things like, oh, no, I have a friend that owns a small piece of multiple buildings and he's getting, you know, $100 a month from a lot of different commercial properties. So he's making, he's not doing anything. He doesn't have to work. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, it's called mailbox money. I'm like, mailbox money? There's no such thing. I was very skeptical. And then as I'm like trying to figure out, like every time I have to be at work to make money, like how can I break that pattern? How do I make money when I'm not at work? And that's when I was like, you know what? Let's call up your friend. I want to get in on a deal with whatever he's doing. And we'll dip our toe in. So, you know, we put in $25,000 into their next deal. And within like a month, they refinanced the property and gave us $23,000 back. But we still owned that property. And then we were being paid, where I'm still paid to today, you know, like $55 or $54 every quarter. It's just a recurring check that just hits my bank account. Then I got my money back and I was like, okay, that was weird. Like now I have my money back. I don't understand how this is working. And then my husband's like, no, now we can put it into something else. And then when we get money from that, we put it in it and we just grow and grow and grow. And that's basically what we started doing. We started putting our money in syndications looking at different asset classes. Mm-hmm. So we invested in shopping centers, in buildings, in assisted living, mobile home parks, RV parks, self-storage, and apartments. And we started getting this kind of just checks hitting our account. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of nice. I want to do more of this. This is interesting. And then I started getting very interested in real estate. I started mm-hmm. listening to podcasts and reading blogs and reading books. And I took a class that two physicians give called Zero to Freedom. Mm-hmm. And they teach physicians how to buy small multifamily. So small, like duplexes and mm-hmm. quadplexes, and how to manage it and how to fix them up and raise the rents. And so I took a class like that. And then I immediately went and we bought three duplexes and we bought them. We renovated them. They came with tenants. We refinanced it and I pulled out all of my money. And so basically I don't have any money in the deal itself, but my tenants are paying down my mortgage. I'm like, this is amazing. Like I'm just building my wealth. How do I continue doing this? How do I 10X it? And that's when I said, okay, well, and I want to learn how to do not duplexes and fourplexes. I want to learn how to do 200 units and, you know, larger. So mm-hmm. I went and I found a mentor that does that. And I signed up for a 2.5 year program and we paid, you know, it's not cheap. And he's been doing it for 20 years and I'm a personal student and we have monthly meetings and we have Zoom calls and we have strategy plus education. And I learned how to find the deals, how to acquire them, how to pencil them and make sure everything works out, how to do the due diligence, how to get the loans, you know, how to create a business plan, how to get the deal, because that's very competitive. Mm-hmm. And then even once you're given the deal, like how to raise the money, how to close it, how to be compliant with the SEC, because these are all SEC regulated, and then how to execute the business plan and do investor relations. And so I've been taught all of this. And, you know, recently in this year, well, not this year, 21, we became general partners on over 1,000 units. So I have 200 units in Houston. I have 688 units in Fort Worth, and I have 184 units in Las Vegas. So we're actively doing it, and we partner with very experienced people that have done it for many, many years. So it's really very totally different than healthcare.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. And I'm able to bring on my physician partners and my physician friends and help them get access to these large deals that are lower risk than the stock market mm-hmm. that they would never have gotten access to before.
So it sounds like there was obviously a lot involved in this. And tell me a little bit about when you started doing that in comparison to taking the job with the your current role with the device manufacturer. Was this something that you started long before you decided to leave your clinical role, or was this around the time of 2017 or 18 when you really decided that you just had to get out?
Yeah, no, I've been doing real estate since 2014.
Okay.
And that's kind of when I started, and that's been on the side, like over those years, I've been reading and listening to blogs and going to conferences and getting into that world. So that was very like simultaneous.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't want to leave medicine and just go into real estate. Like I didn't feel confident that I could do that. So I kind of did a hybrid where I used that real estate to help me decide what I wanted to do. Did I want to leave medicine? Did I want to go into medical device? Did I want to, it gave me that freedom to claim back my time and to really give me that safety net to decide, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Because I was very calculated about it. I'm not much of a risk taker. So I had to have everything planned before I made the jump.
Okay. So just as a rough idea, and this may be a really uninformed question, but as from a cash flow perspective right now, what percentage of your cash flow comes from the passive income side versus your employment side?
So my employment side is the majority of my income. It is not passive at all.
right.
But I was able to step away from, you know, emergency medicine. They can make $400,000, $450,000. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money. And there's nothing that's going to pay that. I was looking at jobs that were 50% pay cut. That's a big chunk to take. So I was able to bridge that. So we're still getting that amount of money coming in mm-hmm. from various real estate avenues.
So then the bigger impact would be on the net worth, your total net worth with your real estate investing and that type of thing as compared to the cash flow side.
Yeah. Okay. The net worth is what, you know, if I sold everything, it would be way more than I would have had when I was a physician.
Right.
But right now I'm working. So I can continue to feed those investments, continue to grow that net worth. Yes, I'm getting cash flow, but that net worth is just growing and growing and growing so that when I want to stop completely working, I don't have to think about it. So that's why I'm not encouraging physicians to just leave medicine.
Right.
This is an avenue to give them, to help them buy back their time. So instead of working 12 shifts, you start investing. You can work 10 shifts, nine mm-hmm. shifts. Mm-hmm. And that extra time does give time for recovery, for wellness, for hobbies, for things that we don't get to do as physicians.
In terms of time, how much time are you spending a week on the real estate side of your business?
It varies per week, but at least 20 hours, at least.
And is your device job pretty much limited to 40 hours, or do you have to commit more of your time to that?
Again, that varies too. There's some weeks where I'm less than 40 hours and there's some weeks where it's more than 40 hours. Mm-hmm. But I'm using my weekends, I'm using my evenings to do this. And my real estate, I'm not doing alone. I started a company with my husband.
Okay.
So we're actually doing the like 50-50 work. He's on the acquisition side. He's on the due diligence. He's on the construction side. Mm-hmm. I'm more reaching out to investors and educating people about this opportunity, this alternative investment that is different from stocks and retirement accounts.
So can physicians invest directly with you in the business that you and your husband have started?
So it's not set up that way. We could eventually do that, but it's actually more we find a deal and they invest alongside of us. So we make money off of the actual deal. So no one pays me fees. No one pays mm-hmm. me finders, like anything directly to me. They take their money and they buy into the property itself.
So each of the deals is an independent deal and you're finding them, you're organizing them, and then you're letting, well, physicians and others know that they have an opportunity to invest in that same opportunity that you and your husband are investing in, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. It sounds like it is a lot of fun, and it sounds like it's you're doing it in a way that, as you say, if you're a risk-averse person, from at least from a financial standpoint, a risk-averse person, these opportunities are relatively risk-free as compared to some of the other investments that physicians tend to get attracted to, it sounds like.
Yeah, we always are looking for like, let's hit it big, let's get a pop, and then so we can just come in and quit our jobs and get a yacht. And it's really not as exciting as that. It's more of compounding steady growth.
Yes.
So yeah, it's not as exciting as like crypto or I became an overnight billionaire or anything like that. So, and that, you know, on one hand, people are like, oh, I'm really excited about real estate. But then when they start seeing like that it takes time, mm-hmm. they don't get as excited. And especially physicians, because they really just want an out. They just want to get hit it rich. But it's really a process.
Well, that's great. That's thank you for sharing that. It does sound extremely interesting. And it sounds like you're approaching it. I like the way you're approaching it. It's very similar to the way I would approach something because I'm extremely risk averse when it comes to finances and that type of thing. I always seem to be more worried about losing than the upside. I really try to find as little downside risk as I can, just especially at my age. I mean, I'm 64. Now's not the time to be quite as risky as I was when I was in my 20s, I guess.
Right.
So I think we've covered most of the topics that I wanted to cover. I would just ask a couple of closing questions. Number one is there anything that I didn't ask you that you would like to share with physicians or other clinicians, nurses, pharmacists, who are at a point where they've just decided that they want to move away from the bedside and explore non-clinical opportunities?
I think there's a twofold piece to that. A lot of times, I'm going to talk in terms of real estate first. So if someone is interested in real estate and they hear like $25,000, $50,000, and they're like, I don't have it. What's important to understand is that it's not, I don't have it. It's if you wanted to do it, you could be creative and find ways. Mm-hmm. Because you can use your retirement accounts to invest in these type of deals if you wanted to. You can tap into insurance policies and you can actually, I mean, a lot of people have money sitting in their savings account and they think that's safe. I mean, they're like, no, I have $150,000 in my bank account. That's all I want. You have to remember that there's inflation right now and it's at 7%.
Yes.
So your money, you don't want to lose. If it's sitting in a bank account, it's losing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for people to start thinking like long-term and be strategic and really decide what they want. Do they want cash flow? Do they want stability? Do they want to hedge against inflation? Do they just want diversification? And to really start becoming active in the wealth strategy. So I think that's important. In terms of what I would tell physicians or people that wanting to leave medicine or the clinical side is there are opportunities out there that you haven't even thought about. The key to opening and expanding your mind is to talk to as many people that have made the transition as possible. People that are doing things that have similar backgrounds to you, but now are doing things totally different. And the more you talk to, the more you hear it, the more it becomes normalized. And you start saying, oh, wait, maybe I can do that because they didn't do anything crazy. If they can do it, why can't I do it? And that's really making that shift in your mind. The mindset change is the most important piece of it.
Yes, I agree. And thank you for sharing that. I think there's a lot of resources that people have available now to explore these opportunities. There's more and more podcasts and blogs and educational opportunities to explore different investing. Some are, as you said, generic physicians and non-physicians, but I'm finding a lot more information out there that is tailored to people who do have the capacity to invest because of their earning potential. And I think there's a lot of opportunities. So I'll include some of those in my show notes. And I'd love to have some of the resources that you tapped into as you started to look at real estate. And we can include those in the show notes as well for my listeners. But I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. This was great. I enjoyed our conversation. Tremendous amount of valuable information. I learned a lot. And thank you so much for taking time, especially on a weekend, to chat with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That wraps up our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Ronnie, thank you for joining us and sharing your story with us. I have included links to Ronnie's website and her LinkedIn page in the show notes. I've also included several resources regarding opportunities working in the medical device industry. The show notes also contain links to resources regarding real estate investing and real estate syndication. I have not personally invested with Ronnie and cannot vouch for any results that could occur from investing with her company. I also have no affiliate links to disclose. Please remember to thoroughly investigate any investment opportunities and perform your own due diligence. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to add them into the comment section on the website, www.physiciansbeyondthebedside.com. I love hearing from you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I am planning a live event in the next few months. During the live event, I will be discussing strategies that can ease the level of burnout you are experiencing. You each know how significant the impacts of burnout can be on our personal and professional lives. Please look for more specific information regarding the live event in the coming weeks. A new resource is also available on my website, A Guide to Effective Decision Making. You can download this free resource by visiting www.physiciansbeyondthebedside.com/effective-decisions. The top 10 leadership skills you can sharpen today remains available for you at my website also. Again, that is www.physiciansbeyondthebedside.com/top-10-leadership-skills. I will include the link for both of these resources in the show notes for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast by clicking the subscribe button in the show notes and add Physicians Beyond the Bedside to your podcast library. I would also very much appreciate it if you could leave a review of my podcast on Apple Podcasts. Share my podcast with your friends and colleagues also that you feel would benefit or who would have an interest in the content. As always, please take good care of yourselves and good luck moving beyond the bedside. I would also like to invite you to join my private Facebook page, Physicians Beyond the Bedside. Go to Facebook and search Physicians Beyond the Bedside and ask for permission to join the group.